Chapter 12. Betrayal. The Prodigal Return. Farsight looked up the mountain path to the tallest of Kanji's perilous peaks. Tiny puffs of condensation misted in front of his olfactory fissure as he caught his breath. The snow-capped mound was swathed in morning mist, but he could make out the buildings dotting its sides as patchy shadows in the distance. The commander stopped for a moment to revel in the crispness of the air. It had been a punishing climb. The aching in his lungs and the hot feeling of exertion under his skin was all too familiar. It was a byproduct of an altitude that he had learned to appreciate, even enjoy, over the harsh Tau Sire he had spent here. Despite the circumstances, it was good to be back. Looking back down the slope, Farsight saw the devilfish that had brought him pivot and turn away, gliding silently along the crevasse that led back to Gelbrin City. It had felt very much like cheating, riding the TY-7 to the sloping shoulders of the peak before climbing the rest of the way. He had been told that only the worthy made it to the top and labored hard to prove it. To his knowledge, this was the first time a student of the master had simply been transported there. Farsight watched the devilfish fade from view over the lower mountain slopes, where gnarled ovidu trees spread their carpets of mauve blossom in the springtime. No going back now. Shouldering the long military satchel he had been given on his departure, Farsight walked up the slope towards the mountain peak. By the side of the path, patches of winter snow glowed and glistened with the pinks and oranges of the dawn. Farsight walked on past the simple huts of the first Kanjian pioneers, humble wooden constructions built to last. Each had housed a dozen of the firecast's finest over the years. Farsight had mended several of the roofs himself and received a beating for it. It was not for the leaders of the Tau Va to rest in comfort, Master Puretide had said, nor to take the work of other castes upon himself, come to that. How true that was. Perhaps if he had remembered it, he would not be here now. Farsight followed the path along the banks of the ice river, where the master had made him stand one-legged in the freezing water, before making him hobble into an Iko stick duel against Kao Yon Shaz. He had fought her with his feet bare and one eye still swollen closed by the bruise of their fistfight the night before. Seeing that as a great injustice at the time, he had railed against it, especially after she had unceremoniously dumped him right back in the river at duel's end. She could beat him even on his best day, and they both knew it. But learning to fight at a disadvantage had saved Farsight's life on many occasions since, and thousands of Firecast lives to boot. Up past the seeing tree he walked, half expecting Monat Caius to still be meditating up there with eyes closed. What secrets the distant young Tau had kept behind those hooded lids. He was a silent inspiration to all those who followed the Monat's lonely path, but only Farsight and Shadow Sun really knew him, and even then there were depths they dared not plumb. Not since the night of the failed Ta Lesera. Walking onward, the commander passed the sloping grove where Kao Yon Shaz had taught him to look in two directions at once. There he had caught two of the drifting leaves she had dropped, twirling them into a bird in flight and offering them to her as a gift. She had been the best of rivals, seeing each new challenge as a chance to spin her traps like the Arctic spiders she admired so much. Her lethal patience had served her well. In time, the young warrioress had become one of the fiercest and most widely respected leaders in the Tau Empire. And there, atop the mountain, was the mentor who had taught them both, them and entire generations of the Firecast. The warrior sage was seated with his back to Farsight, cross-legged upon a simple hover throne discolored by use. He was looking out across the grey crevasse to the waterfalls of amethyst-hued water that cascaded down the opposite peak. It was the same position he'd been sitting in when Farsight had first met him so many Tau Sire ago. His poise was perfect, his body so still he could have been one of Kao Yon Shaz's ghosts. A few spots of chill rain fell from the skies, quickly growing into a light spattering. Farsight felt his skin pucker, the old sensation of trepidation rising in his throat. He pushed it down, straightening his back. He was a well-respected commander of the Firecast now, not some awe-struck student. Come forward, Montcar Sho, said Master Puretide without looking. I can hear you back there, failing to control your breathing.
Farsight forced himself to calm. The disapproving tone of his master's voice still had a potent effect on his mood, and part of him already felt chastened.
You forget your vocal rhythms, continued Master Puretide. It is like listening to a wounded boar snuffling away. Kaoyan Shaz would have spitted you long ago, were she ever here.
It is good to see you too, Master, smiled Farsight, stepping forward and kneeling in the posture of the supplicant bearing his sword. You have not changed, I note.
Puretide turned in his throne, fingers laced in the gesture of elder accepting the gift. His face was as craggy and lined as the cliff opposite, deep lines in his upper lip leading to a thin slit of a mouth. Eyes as hard as diamonds glinted under a noble brow. He looked old, older than any Tau Farsight had ever seen, but still strong.
Time has been kind to you, Montcar Sho, said the old warrior. Your bearing is that of the hero.
If I have earned that accolade, said Farsight, it is only because of the application of your wisdom. The Firecast would be a shadow of its current incarnation without you.
I have trained so many since I took residence here, sighed Master Puretide. 13 Tau Sire I have spent on this mountain, with the young and the naive my only companions. I remember them all, every detail, yet you are the first to come back to me.
Farsight felt something writhe in the pit of his stomach. Suddenly the contents of the satchel over his shoulder felt heavy and awkward.
I had forgotten how beautiful it was here. I doubt that, young warrior. You were never one to forget. I always knew your star would rise high ever since I met you. A raw cadet back then, but still outwitting your tutors daily at Battledome Mont-Ear.
The war sage's face cracked into a wrinkled smile.
One of them in particular did not take kindly to it.
He still doesn't, said Farsight.
The thought of tutor Sharkan Thus made his blood sting in his veins, but he pushed the emotion down. That one did not belong here, not even in spirit.
My most recent students told me of your victory at Arkunasha, said Master Puretide. A true son of Viola, setting the storm against the foe, an apt echo of your sept's own trial by fire.
Too many good warriors died to the orcs there, said Farsight. I cannot consider it a victory.
Do not let the guilt consume you. The Bergel are not easily defeated. Their ways are strange.
Master, it seems we have encountered an even stranger foe in the Gwela.
Puretide frowned, turning back to the crevasse and closing his eyes.
I have seen the fires in the sky. They seek to push a blade of doubt into the heart of the Tau Empire.
I will not allow it, said Farsight.
So you come here to seek my help?
Farsight swallowed.
Yes. For the greater good.
My soul longs to fight, in truth, said Puretide. And yet I laid down my guns long ago. I shall not wear the hero's mantle again.
I would not ask it of you, said Farsight. But the great ethereals, Master, they wish to harness your wisdom in as many ways as possible. They have tasked the Earthcast with this, as well as the fire.
And yet you walk the Monarch's path to reach me, said Puretide. You have that within you, the power of one. Yet you must learn to fight with Kaoyan, Monarch, and Montcar, if you are to fulfill your destiny.
to bait, to decoy, to guide foes as well as friends along the paths of fate. These are things Kao Yuan Shas understands within her soul. But I fear you never will, not truly, just as she will never truly understand the Mont Ka. The victory of the mind is to consider the whole, not its constituent parts, quoted Farsight. Just so, nodded Pure Tide. Easy to repeat, not so easy to achieve. Take the Guela invader's mind into your own, my child. Study the stone shape of his thoughts from the ripples that flow from their impact. You must form the Da Thlevral, the mirror that shows the weakness. Then, and only then, will you prevail. To secure victory, the wise must adapt.
There is little time for study, master, said Farsight. This is not a war confined to a single world like Akunasha. The Guela, their warships, come from nowhere. They pour more of their filth upon Dal Eth with every new night. If they win here, they will not stop until the entire Tau Empire is shattered and our destiny cast into the void.
And so you wish to win in haste, said Pure Tide, his expression sour. Just as you always did.
No, master, said Farsight. I realize that patience is key. Yet the ethereals bade me take a different path.
Pure Tide said nothing, his expression unreadable. The thin, cold rain was turning to tiny flakes of snow, dancing and whirling as it came down around them.
Master, the Guela are here, on this planet, protested Farsight. The invader's beachhead is less than 2 rotar from where we now sit together, talking as if I had never left.
His face felt hot despite the cold wind playing around them.
With a determined push, their strike troopers could take this mountain tonight, said Farsight, and kill you where you sit. Does that not affect your philosophy? Do you not care for victory anymore?
The venerable warrior just looked at Farsight as if the answer was obvious. The habit was just as infuriating as the first night he had spent on the mountain. But this time, the stakes were far, far higher. Just as Farsight's simmering anger was about to boil over completely, the master spoke.
If I die, child, then it will be because my time has come.
And what if Dal Eth dies with you? I cannot allow it!
Farsight swung the satchel from over his shoulder, releasing the strip that held it closed, and pulled out a disc-shaped cryo-casket. He slid a finger around its circumference, and it hissed open. As he gingerly took out the contents, a latticework device made of dangling wires and tiny circular pads, the device writhed slightly. It reminded Farsight uncomfortably of a Dalithian jellyfish.
"This is a recording device," said Farsight. You must wear it, master. It will capture your wisdom, the better to distribute it amongst the commanders of the Tau Va. We need your help, and we need it now.
So, they wish to take my mind, said Pure Tide. I knew this day would come, but I did not expect it would be you that brought it to me.
Farsight made the gesture of the unworthy student.
In truth, I do not know their full intent, master. I only relay it on behalf of the Shaz Artol.
The ancient sage looked sidelong at Farsight, his expression timeless.
Do not bring me falsehoods, Shaw.
The ugly sensation in the commander's gut was getting stronger. He suddenly felt as if he wanted to choke out the contents of his stomachs, but clamped it down.
I only do as I am ordered, said Farsight, as the ethereals have asked of me.
Pure Tide turned in his hover throne to face his student, his face a stoic mask.
Do what you must, then, he said, in the name
of the Tao Va. Taking the jellyfish device and spreading it out with his fingers, as Oviza had shown him, Farsight draped it upon his mentor's bald pate with the utmost care. It was a strange reversal for the student to treat the master in such a fashion. In his mind's eye, a memory flashed of the ceremonial ending of their training upon Mount Kanji. The master had finger-traced the crown of the new commander upon Farsight's head in a mixture of blood and ash. Cao Yon Shaz had been next, then Monat Kais. It had been a day of joy, celebration and relief, the opposite to what Farsight now felt inside. Steeling himself, the commander began pressing the discs onto the neural sites as he had been instructed. All the while, the serpentine feeling of disquiet slithered in his gut. Pyotide looked up at him, his eyes swimming with sadness and regret. In those dark pools were the reflections of a soul steeped in decades of contemplation.
"Our race will walk dark paths one day," he said. "Dark paths indeed."
Farsight did not reply, but inside his heart felt as if it were shriveling. He touched the device's activation node, and a tiny needle behind it extruded, poised over his master's brain. At the last moment, his mentor shot a hand up and grabbed him by the wrist, pulling him close.
"Do not trust them all, my child," whispered Pyotide. "Do not trust them all."
Then Farsight pushed the node all the way in with the faintest of clicks, and Pyotide's eyes rolled back into his head, as white as the snowflakes drifting down from the troubled skies. Commander Shavastos leaned back into the ovoid med slab, its cushioned recesses as welcoming as a soft bed. Proud to be part of this new phase of the Tau's military evolution, he smiled broadly at his fellow commanders and at the Earthcast scientists bustling around them as they placed long needles under the skin of their subject scalps. The door portal hissed open, and all those Tau not strapped to a med slab stood to attention, averting their eyes as the ethereal master himself stepped into the chamber. Every muscle in Shavastos's body strained to stand bolt upright in salute, to make the sign of the Tau Va and progress through the full 7 obeisances, but he was strapped down so securely he could do no more than twitch. He forced himself to adopt an expression of humble awe instead. Aon Var swept further in, his ceremonial guards on either side as he exchanged soft words with the chief scientist, Oviza. Commander Shavastos felt weak with wonder. It was the very greatest of honors to have a member of the ethereal caste watch over him as his operation was performed, let alone to meet Aon Var, master of the Undying Light, in person. He could hardly believe his fortune. Soon he would scale the peaks of military perfection. It was a noble dream, to be spotless in the philosophies of war. He had always been in awe of the legendary Master Pyotide, always looked to him as the epitome of what the Firecast could achieve. To be made one with all that wisdom, and to live as that which he had always most admired, and all before the greatest embodiment of the Tau Va who had ever lived. It was a dizzying thrill just to think about it. An Earthcast scientist stepped into the commander's line of vision, notation disc blinking in his palm.
"Do you, Commander Shavastos, consent to this procedure in the name of the Tau Va?"
There was really only one answer, and Shavastos was pleased to give it.
"Of course."
Shavastos glanced at Oviza, hoping for reassurance. The squat luminary of the Earthcast simply peered at him as if he was an interesting species of insect. Behind the Earthcast scientist, the commander could see a processor bank with a long, tall cylinder of blue liquid atop it. Inside that was the neural crown that had harnessed the sum total of Master Pyotide's wisdom. The wire thing moved gently in its liquid suspension, motes of light trickling down its translucent appendages as it transmitted its data to the engram arrays below. It was strange to think that the best of the Firecast's long and proud warrior tradition could be represented in such a fashion. Strange and a little unsettling. Shavastos looked back to Aon Var, and his doubts vanished completely. This was absolutely the right thing to do.
"Do you have any questions before we begin the procedure?" said the Earthcast scientist, gently taking a sliver of biotech from the bottom of the engram array with a pair of repulsor field tweezers. Perhaps the size of a fingernail, the device had a nest of hairline wires bristling from its sides.
"I only wish to register my profound delight in being allowed to participate in this new furtherance of the greater good," said Shavastos.
"Very well," replied the scientist, pressing a panel upon the wall. He selected a laser scalpel from the small rack of instruments that hissed out. "Then let us begin." "I echo Shavastos's sentiment, of course," said Shaz O'Mayen, the female commander in the next alcove. "Is it possible, in theory, for the engram neurochip to be removed at a later date?"
It was all Shavastos could do not to laugh. What a simple-minded fool she had proved herself to be, asking such a question in the presence of his ethereal majesty. The very idea of wanting to relinquish the strategic brilliance that Master Puretide's engram would transfer to them, it was anathema to good sense.
"Remove it," said
Oviza, his grey slab of a face wrinkling in the middle.
"Well, yes, of course, we could remove it. The side effects would be significant, of course. Once the chip is embedded, the neurological structure of the brain is changed permanently. The host would likely be changed behaviorally, well below operational parameters, in fact. But the chip itself would likely survive intact."
He smiled broadly, showing flat teeth.
"We build these things to last, you know."
"And will all of Master Puretide's magnificence be transferred intact, Oviza?"
asked Aonvar, his purring tones as soft as moonlight on silk.
"That remains to be seen," said the Master Scientist awkwardly. "It is, after all, an experimental procedure. If I could have access to Master Puretide's actual brain, perhaps remove it from its housing, then I could ensure..."
"We shall continue with the current engram plan, for now," said Aonvar. "Proceed. Let the swords of Puretide be drawn, and the Taovar rise magnificently from the flames upon Dal Ith."
Shavastos's horror at the grotesque surgeries Oviza had been suggesting faded away, washed into cool tranquility by the liquid tones of the ethereal master. Aonvar's voice was more soothing than that of any water-cast ambassador. Shavastos could listen to it from dawn until dusk and still drink in his every word.
"Initiating,"
said the scientist in the commander's peripheral vision. Shavastos first felt a series of sharp pricks in his skull as the med slab's anesthetic needles sank deep. Then, nothing. His vision dimmed to grey, but his sense of smell remained. The scent of seared flesh and burning bone filled his olfactory fissure as the top of his head was cut away. Then his senses blurred together as one. Shavastos could actually see the smell of singed hair, taste the monochrome of shifting lights, and feel the spoken words caressing his opened cranium as the Earthcast scientists talked through the procedure. A kaleidoscope of colours whirled across his mind, each a different melody in a symphony of pain. Then the biochip's tiny wires stretched out into his brain, and his consciousness dwindled away completely, subsumed by that of a warrior he had always admired but never met. Unbidden, words rose to the surface and bubbled out.
"Do not trust them all, my child,"
slurred the commander through a mouthful of stringy drool.
"Do not trust."
At the back of the medbay, seen only by Shavastos's milk-white and sightless orbs, Aonvar's eyes narrowed to thin and calculating slits.